afternoon, baseball fans. This is Jim Simpson, along with Tony Kubek. Welcome to Busch Memorial Stadium in St. Louis in the 1966 All-Star Baseball Game. Brought to you by Chrysler Corporation, makers of Plymouth, Dodge, Chrysler, Imperial, and Dodge Trucks. By Gillette, the people who know men best. By Winston Filter Cigarettes. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. And by the brewers of Falstaff Beer, the choicest product of the brewer's art. Well, this is a brand new stadium here in St. Louis, and this is the site of the 1966 All-Star Baseball Game. And no matter who wins or loses, it will be certain that it will be said it was a hot, hot day. Yesterday, the temperature reached 105 degrees. The temperature today already well above 100. We've tried to reach the Weather Bureau, and the line is busy. But they expect temperatures in St. Louis today between 105 and 108 degrees. Already, power has gone off in the city in some sections yesterday. It's expected to go off today, and they're running a little short of water. So no matter what happens on the All-Star field today between the American and National League, everybody will remember this one as the hot one in St. Louis in 1966. This broadcast is authorized under broadcast rights granted by the Commissioner of Baseball solely for the entertainment of our listening audience. And any publication, rebroadcast, or other use of the descriptions and accounts of this game without the express consent of the Commissioner of Baseball is prohibited. Well, on this sunny afternoon, working with us again, as he does all year long, is the former Yankee shortstop, Tony Kubek. And, Tony, the 1966 All-Star Game is just moments away.
Right, Jim. Thank you very much. And here, quickly, is a rundown of the starting lineups for the American League, leading off of the Detroit Tigers at shortstop, Dick McAuliffe. In center field, also from the Detroit Ball Club, Al Kaline in center field. In left field of the Baltimore Orioles, Frank Robinson. In right field, Tony Oliva of the Minnesota Twins. Brooks Robinson batting fifth and playing third base, also of the Baltimore Orioles. And the rookie, George Scott, at first base from the Boston Red Sox. Catching for the American League is Bill Freehan of the Detroit Tigers. At second base, batting eighth, Bobby Knapp of the California Angels. And pitching from the Detroit Tigers, Dennis McClain. For the National League, leading off, well, Willie Mays in center field of the San Francisco Giants. In right field, Roberto Clemente, the Pittsburgh Pirates. In left field, Henry Aaron of the Atlanta Braves, batting third. At first base, Willie McCovey, San Francisco Giants. At third base, Ron Santo of the Chicago Cubs, batting fifth. The catcher, Joe Torre of the Atlanta Braves, batting sixth. At second base, a replacement for the injured Joe Morgan from the Houston Ball Club, Jim Lefevre, a switch hitter of the Los Angeles Dodgers, batting seventh at second base. From the Cincinnati Redlegs, Leo Cardenas at shortstop, batting eighth. And the pitcher, we all know him, Sandy Koufax of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
All right, Tony, and in a moment, Stan Musial, who has participated in 24 All-Star games, will introduce this year's All-Star squads. The prospect of two fine pennant races this year is causing the turnstiles at Major League Baseball parks to swing at a record rate. Latest figures show attendance in both the National and American Leagues is running well ahead of last year. With an all-time high of 22.5 million paying fans, established a new high for the Major Leagues. Through July the 4th, both leagues showed attendance gains of about 20%, so they're headed for another record total gate. One more word here on this hot, hot afternoon about the heat. The umpires are lined up this way. Al Barlick of the National League is behind home plate. At first base, Frank Youmont of the American League. At second base, Ed Vargo of the National League. At third base, Chim Honochek of the American League. In right field down the line, Bob Engel of the National League. In left field down the line, Jerry Neudecker of the American League. But because of the heat, at the end of five, they will switch. Al Barlick will go from behind the plate to third base. Jim Honochek will come from third in behind home plate. Ed Vargo will go from second to first. And Frank Youmont will go from first to second. That is in deference to the heat. Being escorted to the mound now is Miss Jane Morgan, along with Stan the Man Musial. And, of course, it is Mr. Musial of St. Louis, even now vice president of the Cardinal Ball Club that is getting the big hand. And Stan will introduce the entire squads before Miss Jane Morgan will come onto the field to sing the national anthem. The three-day flight of the manned Gemini 10 is scheduled Monday, July the 18th. For full and comprehensive coverage of this, the most complex mission, follow it on NBC Radio and Television starting at 4 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Monday, July the 18th. Down to our left, in their road uniforms, the all-star squad of the American League making its way out to the third base line. And now Stan Musial calls the National Leaguers out. And they'll be coming from the first base dugout. And, of course, being a National League park, you will hear perhaps a greater amount of applause for them. The National League has won 14 of the last 19 All-Star games. They have won 7 of the last 8. And when they won last year, 6-5, that put them ahead of the American League, 18 games to 17 with one tie. The National League has finally overtaken the American League. And Sam Mealy, the manager of the American League, has said here in St. Louis, he will go with everyone, except, of course, his pitchers, and by law he cannot more than 3 innings, that it takes to win. He is not going to substitute for the sake of getting men into the ballgame. He'll go with what he considers to be his best lineup. Earlier today, Tony Kubek talked with manager Hank Bauer. And, of course, manager Hank Bauer manages the Baltimore Orioles, who are now 8 games on top in the American League. And this is what Tony and Hank talked about.
Hank, you presently have an 8-game lead over the rest of the American League, and people are calling you a push-button manager. How does that make you feel?
Well, I don't know what they mean by push-button manager, Tony. I never played for one of them fellas, you know. He just looked at you and said, hey, you go play. And that's just about what I've been doing. I put F. Robinson number 3 and B. Robinson number 4. And if there's a right-hand pitcher, I put Powell 5th. I put Aparicio leading off, and then I fill in the rest of it. And so far, we've been very fortunate with my good pen.
Henry, they said that your pitching would not be strong enough down through the year, and I know you're getting some good years from people like Steve Barber, who was at the All-Star game today. Good relief work from the bullpen. Is your pitching going to last the rest of the year?
Well, Tony, we've got it set up where we think it. We've got good pitching. And it's, for one reason, I go 6 or 7 innings with my starter, and if they're good, then I go to Stu Miller and Eddie Fisher. And I know a lot of people say that I go to the bullpen pretty quick, and I think I've got a reason to when I got Stu Miller and Eddie Fisher sitting out there.
Hank, talking about Eddie Fisher, this looks like the type of trade the Yankees used to make in the middle of the year when they seemed like they needed a player, and all of a sudden they could come up with somebody. Do you have this kind of thinking in mind when you got Eddie Fisher?
Well, first of all, Tony, we were looking for a starter, and when we went looking for a starter, they wanted probably half of my ball club, and I knew that the White Sox was looking for a second baseman, and Adair had a wonderful 2 years with Baltimore while I was there, and we brought this kid up, Davey Johnson, who's done a good job. So we had pretty good value in Adair, and the White Sox were looking for a second baseman, and they were willing to part with Fisher because, from what I've heard, Stanky didn't want 2 knuckleballers in the bullpen. He had Wilhelm and Fisher, and he traded Fisher.
Hank, talking about a Yankee-type trade with the Eddie Fisher-Adair trade, let me ask you this. What's happening to the Yankees? You played for them in their successful years, as I did, and now you're playing against them, managing against them. What is the difference in this ball club?
Well, I think all year, Tony, they've had pretty good pitching. I think it's just lack of consistent hitting. Mantle got hot there for a while, and they were winning, but it's just it's not the old Yankee way they play. It used to be one guy cool off, the other one pick him up, but they don't have that type of ball club no more. And I think this is the reason why Baltimore's been a little successful, is that maybe Frank or Brooks goes into a rut and Powell hits, and we've always got one guy in the lineup that's pretty hot.
Hank, you're talking about the power of the Yankees in the past and the power of the Baltimore Orioles presently with Bauer, Brooks Robinson, Bleffrey, with Powell, rather, the Robinson boys. Let me ask you this. What about the inner defense? I know this is so important. How about the Aparicios, the people that don't get the credit due to them, and, of course, second baseman Brooks Robinson at third base? How about the defense?
Well, Tony, I think Little Louie today is having one of his best years, I'd say, in the last 5 or 6 years. He's playing real good shortstop. He's hitting about 250. He's getting on base for guys like Frank and Brooks. And as I said, he's having a good year. Davey Johnson, to me, is going to be one of the best second basemen in baseball. Right at the present, I think he's got a lot to learn. He's got good speed. He's got a lot of range. But as I said, he's inexperienced, and I think we'll make a real good second baseman. Now you're talking about defense. I've got a little center fielder that, well, he doesn't hit him very much, but he can catch anything that goes up in the air, and that's Paul Blair. And I think you need defense to win these baseball games also.
Hank, let's talk a little bit about today's game. In fact, let's project a little bit farther than that with your eight game. Lee, let's talk about next year's All-Star game a little bit. You may be the manager in that ball game.
I hope you're right, Tony. I don't know too much about these All-Star games. I played in three and I coached in one, but I think a ball game like this is up for grabs for anybody. Everybody thinks that the National League is so much superior to the American League, and I disagree with them for one reason, Tony. They play with a round bat and a round ball in both leagues.
Hank Bauer, thank you so much. Continued success the rest of the year, and we hope to see you next year in the All-Star game managing this ball club.
Thank you very much, Tony.
In St. Louis, the starting lineups are now being given. We'll run down them again for you in just a moment. But right now, we'll be back with more pregame color on the 1966 All-Star Baseball game right after this message from Plymouth.
Car races all over the country. Winner of the Daytona 500, the Rockingham 500, the Atlanta 500, Plymouth, winner of the Darlington 400, the Yankee 300 at Indianapolis, and the grueling Charlotte 600. Of course, you can't buy these race cars at your Plymouth dealers. They are specially modified just for stock car racing. But the same engineering know-how that gives the Racing Emmy such a record of performance and reliability goes into every Plymouth you can buy at your Plymouth dealers. Ride with the winner. Plymouth, a great car by Chrysler Corporation.
Ride with the winner, Plymouth. Ride with the winner now.
For the 1966 All-Star Game in St. Louis, this is Jim Simpson along with Tony Kubek. And introduced at home plate, the honorary coaches today, Ted Williams for the American League and Casey Stengel for the National League. And Tony Kubek, we've been saying it all along, we will repeat it all afternoon, it is hot. You have played in temperatures such as this before. What can we look for as an effect on the players?
Well, Jim, the people that most worry about this heat, of course, are the pitchers and the catchers. But as we know, the starting pitcher is not allowed, according to All-Star rules, to go more than three innings. The only time a pitcher might go more than three innings is in the event of an extra inning ball game. The catchers also worry considerably about this heat, and I talked to Joe Torre and Bill Freehand, the starting catchers for the National American Leagues, and they're kind of hoping that managers Walt Alston and Sam Mealy leave some of the late-inning catching chores for some of those catchers that they took along. But Sam Mealy's plan up till this time is to go along with his starting eight regulars and go as long as he can. He wants desperately to win this and even up this All-Star competition.
All right, Tony, let us now set the defense for you. The National League, of course, is the home team here at a brand-new and beautiful stadium in St. Louis. At first base will be Willie McCovey of San Francisco. Down at second base, Jim Lefevre of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And by the way, Joe Morgan was selected as the starting second baseman but was hit on the knee in batting practice by a batted ball and could not play. However, we noticed in the All-Star introductions by Stan Musial, Joe Morgan was here in civilian clothes and was introduced. But Lefevre of the Dodgers is at second. Leo Cardenas of the Cincinnati Reds is at shortstop. Ron Stanto, who was actually hit in the face by a pitched ball and suffered a fractured cheekbone some weeks ago, has recovered and is hitting well and is at third base. In left field, Hank Aaron. In center field, Willie Mays. In right field, Roberto Clemente. Behind the plate, Joe Torre. And the pitcher, of course, is Sandy Koufax. Now, Koufax has made three appearances for the National League, but has only worked a total of three innings in his All-Star career. He's won one ball game and lost none. And, Tony, I don't believe there are too many that did not know what Sandy Koufax throws, but for those who don't, a rundown on Sandy Koufax.
Jim, Sandy Koufax basically is a fastball, curveball pitcher, but it goes much further than that. He's got an overabundance of speed on his fastball, and his curveball just keeps breaking, and a hitter just doesn't have the time to ever catch up to it. So you'll see guys swinging at his curveball in the dirt, and that fastball that'll be up in their eyes with that extra speed and that rising-type fastball.
All right, Tony, we'll run down the batting lineup for the American League, which will be first up here in just a moment. But now we pause 10 seconds for station identification.
This is WGY, WGFM, Schenectady. It's year-end closeout time at Schenectady Plymouth. Stop in and save today at Schenectady Plymouth, your quality award-winning dealer at 1016 State Street in downtown Schenectady.
The National League team has not yet taken the field. Here is the American League lineup as the National Leaguers warm up along the sidelines. Leading off and playing shortstop, Dick McCullough from Detroit. Hitting .283. Batting second, also from Detroit, in center field, Al Kaline, hitting .325 with 21 home runs and quite a streak before this All-Star game. Batting third, in his seventh All-Star game, the first in the American League, is Frank Robinson, playing left field, hitting .312. In answer to some questions, yes, other players have played on All-Star squads for both leagues, including Jim Bunning, who is in this ball club and this ball game, now in the National League. Batting cleanup, he's won the batting title in the American League the last 2 years in a row from Minnesota, Tony Oliva, hitting .314 now. Batting fifth, a former most valuable player, Brooks Robinson of the Baltimore Orioles, hitting .295, and he's got 70 RBIs. Batting sixth, he was at Pittsfield of the Eastern League last year, George Scott at first base from the Boston Red Sox, hitting .271. Batting seventh, Bill Freehand of Detroit. Batting eighth, the catcher, or rather the second baseman, Bobby Knopf of California. And the pitcher will be Danny McLean, batting ninth from Detroit. And now down to our right, the Vice President of the United States, his coat off on this hot afternoon, will throw out the first ball. Right now, Mr. Humphrey is simply making some motions as if to throw on behalf of the press. And now the National League squad takes the field. Behind the plate will be Joe Torre as Sandy Koufax walks slowly across the mound. And Tony, again, a rundown. How long can the pitchers play and how long can the players play according to All-Star rules?
According to All-Star rules, as I mentioned before, Jim, the starting pitcher can go only three innings. A pitcher, the only time he can go over three innings is if the ball game goes into extra innings. As far as the starting regulars for both teams, the teams that were voted in by the players of the American and National Leagues, they must play a minimum of three innings, and as I mentioned, Sam Mealy plans to play his nine or his starting eight for the entire nine innings. Of course, with this heat, it's hard to say. Talked to Tim McCarver, and Sunday they played a ball game here, the St. Louis Cardinals did, and it was 116 degrees on the field.
I have nothing to say. That is hot. Sandy Koufax making his warm-ups now, and Dick McCullough. 13 home runs, 35 RBIs, 11 doubles, and 7 triples. Steps around to the left-handed side of the plate, watching Koufax throw a curveball before stepping in. The first two men up will be wearing the gray of the Detroit Tigers, Dick McAuliffe and Al Kaline. Strange as it may seem, with the top batting averages of the National Leaguers and their high RBIs, the American Leaguers have not been out-muscled, out-slugged by much. It is very close in total runs scored and in total home runs. The National League is the slight favorite in this ball game. Koufax is ready, wipes his brow. McAuliffe steps in. The shortstop hitting .283 on the season. And now the 1966 All-Star Baseball game from St. Louis is underway as Sandy Koufax gets the sign. The windup. First pitch is hit high in the air. Maybe a play on it. Off third base comes Ron Santo, waving away Joe Torre, the catcher, and there's one down. McAuliffe fouls to Santo, and here is Al Kaline, 325 hitter with those 21 home runs, and this is his 12th All-Star game. Right out of high school, into the major leagues, and a veteran All-Star performer.
Kaline, of course, in recent weeks has been very hot with the bat, Jim, and one streak, he had 11 home runs and 14 ball games. So he's one of the hottest hitters. Well, of course, you can't say he's one of the hottest hitters. They're all hot. They have to be to make this type of team.
Strike one. Koufax took a little off that pitch and caught Kalon at the knees. Now, remember, we have a National League umpire, Al Bonick, behind the plate for the first five innings, and Jim Honachick, an American League umpire, will be behind the plate for the last four. The UNR, the crowd, as Kalon swings and misses, it's strike two.
You can see we mentioned earlier about Koufax's rising fastball. Well, Kalon, right that time, swung at a pitch that was up in his eyes. Koufax, fastball when he's right, takes off.
This one is popped high in the air. It may make the stands, but over comes Willie McCovey, giving chase, and has it right at the stands. Two down. Koufax has two of them on foul outs. That will bring up Frank Robinson. National Leaguers have known him for some time. For the American League, this is his first season. He's burning it up, hitting .312, 21 home runs, 56 RBIs, 19 doubles, 5 stolen bases. And the Baltimore Orioles are 8 games on top in the American League race. And to show you how hot it is, we're keeping score here. When we go to pick up the pens, they slide and slip. It's difficult to hold on to them. Koufax throws. Robinson hits it high, but not too deep. Hank Aaron is back, nearing the warning track, and has it for the third out. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left. The score at the end of the first half of the first inning, the American League nothing, the National League nothing.
Winston tastes good. Like your cigarette should. Make your cigarette Winston.
When I change to Winston, I change for good, 'cause I got the taste like I knew I would. Winston tastes good like it should. When you change to Winston, you change for good.
Make your cigarette
Winston.
This is Tony Kubek along with Jim Simpson coming to you from St. Louis' new ballpark, Memorial Stadium. And to give you a brief rundown on this ballpark, it's completely encircled. The dimensions down the both lines are 330 feet. Dead center field is 414 feet. The power slots right and left center field, 386 feet. The playing surface is very hard. It's been sunbaked for the past few weeks. The ball goes through the infield very quickly. The ball does carry fairly well in this ballpark.
All right, stepping in for the National League, Tony, in the bottom of the first with no scores, Willie Mays, leading off and playing center field. And for those of you who may say, hey, wait a minute, why is he leading off? Walt Alston said, I did it in 1960. He got 4 hits, and I want as much speed as I can at the top of the batting order. So Willie Mays will lead it off, 277 on the year, facing Denny McLain, the Detroit right-hander, making his first All-Star appearance. And Denny took something off his curveball on that one, a slow curve, and Mays was out in front of it. Strike one. McLain has never appeared in an All-Star game before. He's only 22. His father-in-law is Lou Boudreau, who today is seeing McLain pitch in the majors for the first time. He's here in St. Louis. McLain throws fastball this time, catching the outside corner, and it is quickly strike two to Mays. Sandy Koufax retired the side in the top of this inning on 5 pitches.
And the number one hitters for both of these teams didn't waste any time. McAuliffe, of course, popped the ball up, and Mays had a vicious cut at a slow curveball from Dennis McLain.
McLain throws inside with the fastball this time. It is 1-2. And that is the first ball thrown by either pitcher that has missed being in the strike zone. Mays will be followed by Roberto Clemente of Pittsburgh and Hank Aaron of Atlanta. 1-2 pitch for McLain. He got him looking on the outside corner. Looked like a hard slider, but Mays is out.
It'll be interesting to see if McLain pitches the same type of pattern he has in the games we've seen him previously this year. It takes him a few innings before he really gains his control. He's a hard thrower, has a good fastball, and Charlie Dressen taught him a slow curveball, and this makes his fastball that much more effective.
Here is Roberto Clemente of Pittsburgh, .328 on the year, 13 home runs, 56 RBIs. This is Roberto's 7th game. He has won the batting championship a couple of times here in the National League. We are in the bottom of the first. There's no score. in this 1966 All-Star Baseball game. One down in the bottom of the inning. McLean's pitch is a fastball right down the middle. Quilini taking all the way. It's strike one.
The infield is playing McLean about straightaway. McAuliffe, the shortstop, is playing him up the middle. And Knopp, the second baseman for the American League, shading him slightly toward right field.
Hit into center field. Al Kaline stops, now starts in, and is there and has it for the second out. That will bring up Hank Aaron, hitting .289, 26 home runs, and 67 RBIs. His 11th All-Star game. The defense, George Scott, is down at first from Boston. Bobby Knopp of California is at second. Dick McAuliffe of Detroit is at short. Brooks Robinson of Baltimore is at third. Frank Robinson of Baltimore is in left field. Al Kaline of Detroit in center. Tony Oliva of Minnesota is over in right. Bill Freehan, your catcher from Detroit. And McLean from Detroit, the pitcher. Two down, bottom of the first, no score. McLean's first pitch, curveball. Same first pitch he gave to Willie Mays. Over, strike one.
You talk about setting defenses, Jim. The most difficult thing in All-Star or World Series play is setting up a defense and a pattern of pitching. There's a strike, slider on the outside corner to Aaron. The most difficult thing when you haven't seen a player all year long is to establish a pitching pattern for your pitcher so that you can play your infield strategically. Play them where that hitter, that good hitter, is going to hit the ball most often. This becomes difficult when you see these players so infrequently.
The two-strike pitch bounces in the dirt alongside of the plate. Bill Freehan trots off to his right and keeps the ball in play. For those of you who may have just joined us, may we again remind you that the temperature today is expected to reach 108 degrees. One and two the count to Aaron. Two down, bottom of the first, no score. Another curveball. This one hangs high, and it's 2-2 to Aaron. Willie McCovey is on deck. Vice President of the United States is here. The entertainer Jane Morgan sang the national anthem, and we have a packed house of more than 50,000. 2-2 pitch, and he's called out on strikes. Second strikeout for McLean is off to a good start, as both pitches are. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left. And the score at the end of the first inning is the American League nothing and the National League nothing.
That's Bugles and Drums, and you'll hear that each evening Monday through Friday at 5:45 on WGY when I bring you Spotlight on Sports, the only full 15-minute radio program in the area devoted exclusively to sports news of the day. This is Bill Carpenter inviting you to hear a Sports Spotlight each day and to tune in Mondays and Thursdays at 5 minutes past 7 p.m. for two new programs of auto racing news, Northeast Racing Roundup on Mondays, and Speedway Highlights on Thursdays. And these programs are only part of WGY's extensive and intensive coverage of sports. Monday through Friday at 6:15, horse racing fans will like Howard Tupper's Track Talk. Golf enthusiasts will enjoy Bill Edwardson's Golf Talk on Thursdays at 6:35 p.m. with questions from golfers and answers from pros. All this plus Mets baseball and national sports coverage from NBC on WGY, your reliable station for sports in 26 counties of New York and New England.
Said it's expected to get up to 108. We move now to the top of the second inning. Tony Oliva of Minnesota, Brooks Robinson of Baltimore, and George Scott of Boston to face Sandy Koufax, who threw just five pitches in the first inning. Koufax's first start in All-Star play, believe it or not. Oliva is a left-handed batter. He has won the last two American League batting championships. Facing Koufax, takes strike on the outside, and of course, Tony faced Sandy Koufax in the World Series last October.
Both Tonys, this one and the one hitting right now.
How did you make out?
Neither one of us fared too well, as most hitters don't.
Swing and a miss by Oliva, and it is strike two. And Koufax has thrown nothing but strikes. We're in the top of the second. There's no score and none down. Bertie Tebbets is coaching at third and Hank Bauer at first. Took something off that pitch. It's up high, and it's 1-2 to Tony Oliva. In the first inning, McAuliffe hit the first pitch and fouled to Santo at third. Al Kaline fouled out to McCovey just near the right field stands, and then Frank Robinson lifted the lazy fly to left. And in five pitches, Koufax had the American League down. Here's Oliva, 1-2 the count. Waits, hits this one straight up in the air, and again McCovey may have the chance as he comes over the first baseline, and it hits on a rail in back of a television camera and bounces almost back out to the mound where Koufax, who has already gotten a new ball from Al Bartik, picks it up and throws it out of play. Count is 1-2 to Oliva.
As Jim mentioned earlier, Ted Williams is one of the honorary coaches along with Casey Stengel, and Ted Williams, as he most often does, spent all of his time in batting practice behind the batting cage, and he made comments on every hitter and almost every pitch for the press, for the radio and sports announcers, and he feels this is a real good background. He said he'd love to get up there and hit in this ballpark.
Hi from Koufax, it's 2-2, and Tony, you'll have to say that the radio and press are still in awe of the splendid splinter, Ted Williams, because they were talking to Ted as much as they were to any of the top all-stars who are still in the midst of their careers. Koufax taking his time in this 100-degree heat. 2-2 is the count to Oliva, first man up in the second. There's no score, and he hits this one high and foul. Back comes Torrey near the screen, but it bounces two rows in, and the count remains 2-2.
The official temperature reading at game time is 100 degrees at the airport here in St. Louis. Down on the playing field with the absence of any wind whatsoever, I would guess, Jim, it's probably more like 108.
And you'll get no argument at all out of me.
Would you believe 107?
I'll take the 8. 2-2 is the count. Oliva hangs in there. 314 on the year with 49 RBIs, 17 home runs, a lot of power, and a good man with his wrists. He can control that bat, takes up high, and now Koufax has gone all the way with Oliva. It is 3-2.
We mentioned Tony Oliva facing Koufax in last year's World Series, and I had a chance to talk to him about Koufax's curveball. Many pitchers have good curveballs, as does Dennis McClain, but Koufax's curveball just keeps breaking, and you think you've got it as a hitter, and it disappears.
Line drive to center field. Willie Mays started back and now takes it with that patented basket catch, shoulder high, and there's one down. Oliva lines to Mays, and that will bring up Brooks Robinson. Brooks again at third base for the American Leaguers with 70 RBIs on the year. .295 is batting average, 17 home runs, a most valuable player in the American League, and with one down and no score in the top of the second, Robinson faces Koufax and takes high. Brooks, of course, bats from the right side. Oliva was a left-hander. Both teams are predominantly right-handed hitting. The only switch hitters on the National League squad. Koufax waits. High, a changeup, got way away from him and brought an ooh from the crowd as Torrey had to straighten up and reach up for the pitch. It's ball two.
That's one of the rare off-speed pitches you'll see Koufax throw. He's basically, as we mentioned, fastball, hard curveball. He took something off this pitch.
There's a line drive to left field coming in quickly as Aaron, and it gets by him as he tries for the shoestring catch, rolling to the wall. Robinson is around first, around second. He'll go for third. Here's the throw from Aaron into third to the cutoff man. And it is a three-base hit for Brooks Robinson. Aaron tried for the shoestring catch. The ball tipped his glove. It would have been a great catch had he made it, but the ball went all the way through and rolled to the wall. And Robinson is on third with a triple. And that will bring up George Scott, the first baseman from Boston, who just a year ago, Tony, was in the Eastern League playing for Pittsfield. And here he is in the All-Star game with a chance to drive in the first run of the ballgame.
And in just three short months, Jim, he already has the American League pitchers in awe. They talk about the ball he hit in Yankee Stadium, the ball he hit in the Baltimore ballpark. He can hit him a long way.
Koufax gives him the fastball, but it's up high, ball one. Brooks Robinson is at third with the potential first run of this ballgame. There's no score. We're in the top of the second. One man out. Oliva lined to Mays to lead off the inning. Scott, a right-handed batter, takes inside and low from Koufax. Has not changed up on him yet, and it's 2-0.
The National League infield has moved to about the halfway depth. The shortstop Cardenas and the second baseman Lefevre are about halfway. Santo, the third baseman McCovey, are playing a little bit closer into the hitter. They're going to try and cut the run down at the plate.
Koufax throws, and Scott swings and misses on the fastball. It's 2-1. That one was about shoulder high, and Mr. Scott took a real rip at it. 18 home runs, 54 RBIs, 6 triples, and 13 doubles for his .271 average. High and inside, and it's 3-1, and Koufax, who got the side on 5 pitches, has thrown a bundle here in the second inning. He went all the way with Oliva, who kept fouling the ball off before lining out. Robinson has tripled, and now Scott has worked the count to 3-1. The Dodgers left-hander has the sign and throws, and strike two. Scott was swinging on the 3-1 pitch and took a good cut, but missed it, and it's 3-2. On deck is Bill Freehand, the Detroit catcher. And as Tony said, in this heat, it's the catchers who will really suffer. Ground ball at the plate, bouncing back and over the screen. Actually hit by the plate and then hopped up and went over the screen, the backstop. Still 3-2.
Hank Bauer, the first base coach, yelled into Scott to try and cut down his swing off Koufax. Scott, of course, is a hard swinger. He has that long home run type swing, and Bauer walked halfway up the line and alerted him to the fact that Koufax does throw hard, as everyone well knows, and he's trying to get him to punch that ball and hit it somewhere to score this run.
Here's a 3-2 pitch from Koufax. It's straight up in the air. This one, McCovey will have a play on in foul territory by the first base coach's box, and he's got it, and that's two down, and Koufax is almost out of trouble, if you can be in an all-star game.
And you can see the American League hitters have been a little bit late on Koufax's fastball. McAuliffe fouled out to the third baseman, Kaline to the first baseman, and now Scott to the first baseman. They're a little bit late.
Here's Bill Freehand, the Detroit catcher. 8 home runs, 30 RBIs, .248. His batting average in the regular American League season, now with two down, and Brooks Robinson still perched at third base. No score. Top of the second inning. Bertie Tebbets walks over and says a few words to Robinson at third. Sandy Koufax can work 3 innings, his first All-Star start. Just then, Jim Lefevre shifted to his left on free hand, and there's a wild pitch. Gets over the head of Torrey, comes back, and Robinson scores.
And the pitch actually was a breaking ball that did absolutely nothing. It was high and over Torrey's head, and Torrey leaped up into the air. The ball bounced off his glove, but he had no chance, and it scored as a wild pitch.
Well, Sandy almost cut loose with one of those, you'll recall, Tony, a little while ago. It had brought the ooze from the crowd. Another breaking pitch. It was way up high. And this time, Torrey, who is no small man, well over 6 feet, leaped up and leaped for the ball, and it went over his outstretched glove. Just ticked it. Rolled to the screen, and Robinson scored, and the American League is in front, 1-0. The count is 1-1 to Freehand, who fouls this one to the screen, and it's 1-1.
On the triple by Robinson, it appeared that Henry Aaron did not get a real good jump. The ball was hit well on the line. Aaron hesitated just somewhat, tried to come in and make a shoestring catch, and of course the ball got by him. I think, Jim, that with this shirt sleeve crowd, predominantly white shirts, the ball may be a little bit difficult to pick up off the bat for the defensive team.
There's a line drive to right. Clemente's coming over and takes it on a basket catch for the third out. One run on one hit. No errors and none left. And at the end of an inning and a half, the score, the American League 1, the National League nothing. Say, have you ever been spoiled? I mean really spoiled by something that's so good you just can't go back to the way things were before. Well, if you have, you know what a great feeling it is. But if you haven't, you're going to get a chance to find out what it's like as early as tomorrow morning. You know how? By shaving with the Gillette Super Stainless Blade, also known as the Spoiler. The Spoiler isn't just a new razor blade, it's a whole new standard of shaving. The Gillette Super Stainless has a miracle plastic coating baked onto the edge, a coating invented and patented by Gillette. When you shave with this new blade, you can actually feel how much less pool there is. And that's when you'll become spoiled, so completely spoiled that you'll never go back to your old way of shaving, no matter how much you liked it before. So after the game, why don't you go out and get yourself the Spoiler, the Gillette Super Stainless Blade. You might as well get started getting spoiled right away. In St. Louis, for the bottom of the second inning of the All-Star Game for 1966, the American League is on top. On a triple by Brooks Robinson that skipped by Hank Aaron and a wild pitch by Sandy Koufax. Denny McLain, here in the bottom of the second, will face Willie McCovey, Ron Santo, and Joe Torre. And McLean got Mays and Aaron, two of the game's best hitters, looking on third strikes in the first inning. The third man, Clemente, flied to center. First pitch, McCovey made a move toward the ball, but it was outside. The scoreboard has yet to show a ball or a strike. We did not see Albolic go up with the right hand, so we'll call it outside. There's a foul back. There's strike one. That is up, but as yet, Tony, it only says strike one.
Jim, thus far, all we've talked about is Koufax, good fastball and good curve. Well, this fella on the mound for the American League, Dennis McLean, also is one of the hardest throwers in baseball.
Here's the pitch, and now that one is low, and the scoreboard is now up to snuff. It is 2-1 on Willie McCovey. 296 on the year, 17 home runs, including a couple in a game against Cincinnati Saturday, carried by NBC Television, 49 RBIs. One run on one hit, no errors for the American League, 0-0-0 for the National League, and this one is hit sky high in the air. Brooks Robinson, standing on the grass, has it for the first out. McCovey pops to Robinson at third. Here is Ron Santo. And when you start talking about intestinal fortitude, give a lot of credit to Mr. Santo, the Chicago Cubs. Fractured cheekbone in a long hitting streak, sent to the hospital, but back in a little more than a week with the Chicago Cubs, and he picked right up where he left off, hitting 311, 18 home runs, 40 RBIs. This is Ron's fourth game, the Cubs' third baseman.
When Stan Musial introduced the National League All-Star team, the biggest hands went, of course, to the St. Louis favorites, McCarver and Curt Flood of this ball club. A very close second was Ron Santo,
who lines the ball to Brooks Robinson at the left field line and back at third base, and they're two down. Mr. Robinson has done that all his life. He is quite a third baseman, no mistake about that.
Right, Jimmy, went almost into foul territory for that ball, backhanded it, made the play look easy, as he always does.
Here is Joe Torre, the All-Star catcher, 21 home runs, 53 RBIs, hitting 286. This is his fourth game, and Joe this year has also played a little first base, but he's been selected as the All-Star catcher. Two down in the bottom of the second inning as Torre takes a strike on the inside corner around the knees from Denny McLean. The score, the American League 1, the National League nothing.
Rebellion Girl. Does this time of year make you want to head out from the herd and go galloping off in exciting new directions? Well, come on. Dodge Charger is for you.
Charger. America's first full-size fastback. With sleek styling outside. Man-size comfort inside. Standard? A big, powerful V8. Disappearing headlights, tachometer, and luxury interiors, too. Plus fold-down rear seats that give you luggage room by the wagon load. Dodge Charger. Looks like a high-priced thoroughbred, but costs only a few dollars more than those pony-sized cars comparably equipped.
After all, why settle for a pony when a full-sized Charger costs so little more? Mount up. The Dodge Rebellion wants you.
This is Jim Simpson along with Tony Kubek back in St. Louis, where the American League leads at the end of two by the score of 1-0. One run on one hit, no errors for the American League, no runs, no hits, no errors for the National League. And now we pause 30 seconds for station identification.
This is WGY, WGFM, Schenectady. It's happened, yes, through the spectacular efforts of every employee at Schenectady Plymouth, the Outstanding Chrysler Corporation Quality Dealer Award is theirs for the fifth time. Only seven dealerships out of the entire region will receive this award this year. This proves that the trying harder people at Schenectady Plymouth are offering the best in quality selection, used car warranty, and service. Why not stop in and see for yourself? That's Schenectady Plymouth, 1016 State Street in Schenectady.
Hit down to Santo, who charges at third, throws to McCovey at first, and there's one down. Now the man they call the Detroit Bulldog, Denny McLane. He's pitched 149 innings this year, 3.08 average, struck out 104, walked 59. He's had two one-hit ball games and two two-hit ball games, and right now he has the National League's hitless. He's retired six in a row. At bat with one down in the third, and he swings on the first pitch, strike one. McLane, in looking over the lineup, said before this game, there's nobody that worries me, not one person that is. They all do. This one he hits high in the air and will make the stands and back of home plate on the right side. It's two strikes to McLane. Dick McAuliffe on deck. Kovacs ready with a two-strike pitch, and this one is up around his eyes, and McLane goes for it to strike out. And that is the first strikeout for Sandy Koufax. Two down, here is Dick McAuliffe, the left-handed hitting third baseman, a rather shortstop from Detroit, who fouled DeSanto at third to lead off the first inning. As a matter of fact, he hit the first pitch.
In last year's ball game, I think many people will recall, McAuliffe hit a home run for the American League. He had a strong first half of the season last year, as he is this year.
This one is over McAuliffe's head, and he has to duck and back out of the box. Not a hard pitch from Koufax, but nevertheless right in the vicinity of Dick's head. It's ball one.
It seems as though Koufax, as he did in last fall's World Series, is having difficulty controlling his breaking ball. The wild pitch was a curveball that got away from the, as is, was this one that went over McAuliffe's head.
There's a strike. And we have just received information from the public address announcer that Jim Bunning is warming up to come in for the National League and Jim Cott for the American League. The pitchers now can only go through inning, three innings. It is 1-1, the count to McAuliffe with two down here in the third inning. This one is high and inside again. And Koufax again, when he takes something off the pitch, as Tony Kubek said, is having trouble getting it over the plate. 2-1 to McAuliffe. This one is sliced foul and upstairs. 330 down each line, 414 to dead center, 386 in the alleys to right and left in this brand new and beautiful stadium here in St. Louis, which the Cardinals did not occupy until after the season actually began. Two out in the top of the third, 1-0 the American League leads, 2-2 the count to McAuliffe as Koufax throws a breaking ball that is fouled up into the air. Torrey's after it, Santo's after it, now Santo takes it for the third out. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left. The score at the end of the first half of the third inning is the American League 1 and the National League nothing.
Winston tastes good like your cigarette should. Make your cigarette Winston.
When I changed to Winston, I changed for good, cause I got good taste like I knew I would. Winston tastes good like it should. When you change to Winston, you change for good. Like your cigarette should.
Make your cigarette
Winston.
Back in St. Louis, it is the bottom of the third inning. Jim Lefevre, Leo Cardenas, and obviously someone will bat for Sandy Koufax, who's now worked his three innings. Koufax gave up one earned run, one hit, and struck out one, and walked no one. Lefevre at second base as Joe Morgan of the Houston Astros was injured after being selected to that position. Lefevre hitting 261 on the year from the Dodgers. McLane throws and Lefevre swings on the first pitch. Going back at shortstop is McAuliffe, waving everybody away. And now the left fielder Frank Robinson says, I've got it, and he takes it. One down. The Leo Cardenas, the all-star shortstop from Cincinnati, hitting .260 in his third year as a member of the all-star squad. 36 RBIs this year, 11 home runs. One out in the bottom of the third, the American League on top, 1-0. Lutz Robinson tripled and came home on a Koufax wild pitch. McLean throws, strike, fastball.
American League infield is playing Cardenas about straight away. The outfield is playing him pretty deep. For a shortstop, of course, Cardenas does have some power for his size.
Low with the fastball again, and it is 1-1 to Cardenas. Herman Franks of the San Francisco Giants is your coach at first, and Harry Walker of the Pittsburgh Pirates your coach at third. Walter Austin is managing the National Leaguers, Sam Neely, the American Leaguers. McLean throws, and there's a ball lined at the Bobby Knopf at second base. Two down.
Jim, Bobby Knopf started running off the field, apparently thinking there were two outs. He'd carry the ball past second base all the way to the pitcher's mound, and McAuliffe alerted him, and, well, a hand you hear right there is Kurt Flood.
Sandy Koufax is out after working his three innings, and Kurt Flood, and as Tony said, he gets a tremendous hand. He is a Cardinal, hitting .285 on the year, 45 RBIs, four home runs. He's stolen 9 bases. McLean faces him and throws him a breaking pitch that's right over, strike one. McLean is within one out of pitching 3 perfect innings in all-star play, and for 22 years old, well, that's quite a thrill. National League is whooping it up as a fastball from McLean catches the outside corner. It is strike two. The umpires will switch here at the end of 5 innings. It is Al Barlick of the National League behind the plate at this moment. Bottom of the third, 1-0, American League leading, 2 down. Big curveball climbs high and doesn't come down or over. It is 1-2 to Kurt Flood.
Denny McLean is usually not a control pitcher, and yet Bill Freehand, the American League catcher, is sitting on that outside corner, and McLean is just threading the needle.
1-2 pitch, fastball, but it's too low and outside, and it's 2-2. On deck, the leadoff batter, Willie Mays. Tony, I'll never get used to Willie Mays leading off. But Walter Austin was successful with it in 1960 and is using it again here. 2-2 pitch now to Kurt Flood. Fastball again low. This time it is lower, and Flood has walked and worked his way to a 3-2 count. Two down, and the Cardinal fans, if Kurt can be the first to reach base against Denny McLean, you will hear quite a hand.
And I imagine Denny McLean would just as soon finish his 3-inning stint right now without having the wondrous Willie come to the plate.
Well, here's the 3-2 pitch, and it's lined right back to the center. Knopf picks it up and back to second base and throws him out as it was slowed up, I believe, by Denny McLean, the pitcher. It went right back through the mound, but Knopf threw him out. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left. And the score remains at the end of the third inning, the American League 1, the National League nothing.
Hi, this is Jerry Ducey. Let's take a look at a typical morning at your house. Dad has just left for work. And the lady of the house is just about to settle down the youngest member of the tribe. There's all settled down now. Now you've just made very short work of all the breakfast dishes. Now you're all set to relax with music on the Jerry Ducey Show. I'm here every day at 8:10 on the dial from 10:15 to 11:30. I wish you'd listen in. It'll help keep a young fellow off the streets. That's me.
Seeing something happen here at the All-Star Game that I have never witnessed, and probably most people have not. A few thousand people have gotten up because of the unbearable heat and are walking back into the shade under the stands.
I don't think they're on their way home, Tony. But nevertheless, as we said, it is a very hot day, and they are certainly seeking shelter. Jim Bunning coming in now is 9-5 on the year from the Philadelphia Phillies with an unearned run average of 2.38. Repeat for you, the American League is out in front, 1-0, and the totals thus far, one run, one hit, no errors for the American. The National Leaguers have failed a scratch against Denny McLain, who pitched three perfect innings. To lead off against Jim Bunning, here is Al Kaline, who fouled to McCovey at first back in the first inning. Jim Bunning, like Frank Robinson, has been in the All-Star game for both leagues now. He's in the National League now. It was a curveball. It could have even been a hard slider, but nevertheless, it catches the inside corner to Kaline, and it's strike one. The only hit of the ball game, a triple by Brooks Robinson that skipped past Hank Aaron in left field, and he scored on a wild pitch of Koufax, and that's it. Bunning ready and throws another breaking ball. This one is a big curve, and it's over for strike two.
And Jim, of approximately 15,000 seats here at this Memorial Stadium in St. Louis, I think about half of those in the sun, or maybe a third, are vacant.
They have been here, but in better than 100-degree temperature, they have left. Here's a ball hit straight up in the air into short right field. Clemente is coming in, going back as a second baseman, and it is Lefevre who takes it in fair territory just before crossing the foul line. Here is Frank Robinson, who flied to left. One down in the fourth inning. The All-Star game, and, well, as it's been said, and we will continue to say it because you will read about it tomorrow, and it is a fact, it is very hot in St. Louis, has been well over 100 for a number of days, and they tell us there's no relief in sight. Whoops, curveball almost got away from Bunning, way inside. Robinson turned a shoulder and avoided the pitch. It's ball one.
And a sign on the board in center field reads, Jim Cott warming up for the American League.
One and oh pitch from Bunning to Frank Robinson, high and inside with the fastball, and it's 2-0.
The bullpens here in this ballpark are almost under the stands, and it is impossible to see from up here, as it is from most places in the ballpark, who is warming up, so they give you a flash on the scoreboard to let you know who is warming up.
2-0 count. Ball is lying deep, but I believe it'll climb foul into left field seats in the third deck. Foul ball, it's 2-1.
Jim, I'd like to have gotten a tape measure out for that one had the ball been fair. That ball carried well over 400 feet, probably close to 450. He hit it real well and just barely curved foul.
Well, it's 330 down the foul line, but remember, this got into the upper deck. 2-1, one down, fourth inning, American League at bat. They lead 1-0. The 1966 All-Star game, as Bunning throws, this one is on the fists of Robinson, and he fouls it off. It's 2-2. It's early in the ball game, but the only changes that have been made, Kurt Flood batted for Sandy Koufax, and Jim Bunning has now relieved Koufax here in the fourth inning. And, of course, Denny McLain is now through. After pitching three perfect innings and leading 1-0. 2-2 pitch coming up from Bunning. Big curve. He got him on the inside corner. Strike three. Robinson is out.
I don't think Robbie liked that pitch, Jimmy. Hesitated at home plate, looked at the plate umpire, and is walking away slowly right now, but I think he thought the ball may have been inside.
That is the first strikeout for Jim Bunning and the second for the National League. Here's Tony Oliva, who lined to Willie Mays in center field to lead off the second inning. Minnesota Twins, American League batting champion. Bunning throws, and there's a drive into left field. Coming over is Aaron, and going out is Cardenas, and Cardenas takes it on the dead run for the third out. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left as Bunning sets him down 1-2-3. The score at the end of the first half of the fourth inning is American League 1 and National League nothing.
Lisa, it's happened.
Oh, no.
Yes, our family size right guard is empty.
Oh, Jim. We'll buy another. Together.
Gillette Right Guard, the perfect personal family deodorant, because nothing touches you but the spray itself. 2 seconds gives you 24-hour protection. Protection that lasts far longer with regular use.
Look, Lisa, our new family size Right Guard.
Enough to last forever.
Well, almost.
Now's the time to try new Gillette Foamy Shaving Cream. Gillette packs a mountain of smooth shaving comfort into every can of new Gillette Foamy. You get billows of creamy, rich, whisker-wilting foamy lather that soaks deep down into your beard, keeps it soft and moist right through your shave. Nobody makes a lather like Foamy. So moist, so rich, so creamy. Nobody makes a lather like Gillette.
The three-day flight of the Man Gemini 10 is scheduled Monday, July the 18th. For full and comprehensive coverage of this, the most complex mission, follow it on NBC Radio and Television, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Monday, July the 18th. Well, the American Leaguers, who lead by the score of 1-0 as we move to the bottom of the fourth, have a brand new pitcher. After Denny McLain worked 3 innings, giving up no runs, no hits, no errors, no nothing, because McLain set the side down in order 3 separate times, and he struck out 3 men. It is Jim Cott of Minnesota, a fine hitting pitcher, and Tony Kubek, what kind of pitcher is Cott?
Jim Cott, basically, Jim, is a fastball, curveball pitcher. He has to keep his stuff low to be effective. He is not overpowering, throws a sinker ball and a curveball.
Well, the National League will move to the top of their batting order. Willie Mays, Roberto Clemente, and Hank Aaron. They trail 1-0. And remember, overall, the National League has won 18 ball games, the American League 17, and has been 1 tie in all-star play. Here is Willie Mays, who was caught looking on a curveball from Denny McLain back in the first inning. Cott, a left-handed pitcher, gives him a fastball. Inside and low, it is ball one. Cott's record on the year is 1-11, lost 6, earned run average 2.75. Walked only 24, but struck out 87. There's a line drive, probably fall in for a base hit. The first hit for the National Leaguers. Fielded in left field by Frank Robinson. Mays is on with a single. Willie Mays, who has a bundle of all-star records, is adding to it every year. And at 35, Willie feels that maybe he can play as late as age 40. Here's Roberto Clemente, a .328 hitter in the regular season. He flied to K-line in center in the first inning. But the National League now has a man on base. They trail 1-0 to the American League here in the bottom of the fourth. Temperature's better than 100 degrees, and to complete what Tony Kubek said, the left field stands, and this is a sellout, remember, about 20 to 25% empty now as people have gone back into the shade. Cott throws, and Clemente started to offer, held back, and took strike one.
Talking about records, Jim, that was Willie Mays' 22nd hit in all-star competition, and that's another record.
Mays with a fair leadoff first base. George Scott holding against him. Cott remembers a left-hander. Here's a swing on a fastball by Clemente, and it is strike two.
Cott had Willie jumping back toward first base that time. Of course, you'll remember Clemente can hit the ball to all fields, is a good hit-and-run man, and with Willie on first base, the National League's liable to try and steal a run here, steal that extra base.
Mays has stolen 4 bases this year. Certainly not a high total, but nevertheless, he is, of course, a threat and can go at any time. And fielder percentages are in his favor. Leads off. Outside is the pitch to Clemente. It is 1-2. Nobody out in the fourth. American League leading 1-0, but the National League has come back with its first hit. Now facing Jim Cott of Minnesota. There have been no other changes except pitching changes and one pinch hitter. Cott's ready and throws the fastball. This one is lined, and I believe it will drop in. It does. It handcuffs Kaline. Mays stops at second. And then Kaline rifles a throw on one hop to Brooks Robinson at third. Men on first and second. None out.
And as you said, the ball handcuffed Kaline in center field. He was playing Clemente in right center field. And the line drive, he did not catch it in his glove. He actually caught it in his stomach and more trapped the ball against his body than catching it.
Well, Bill Freehan of Detroit has run out to talk to Jim Cott, perhaps under the stands where they warm up. The American League's Sam Mealy may be getting someone ready. Two straight base hits, both of them line drives by Mays and Clementi. And here's Hank Aaron with 67 RBIs this year. He was caught looking to end the first inning on a strikeout by Denny McLane. But this is a different situation. Men on first and second, none out. The National Leaguers trail 1-0. Kopp, the pitcher. Knopf starts toward second but comes back as Kopp throws outside with an off-speed pitch, and it's 1-0 to Hank Aaron. Aaron stepped out for the moment and looked down to Coach Harry Walker, the manager of the Pirates, who is coaching at third base. Kopp looks back, throws high to Aaron, and it is 2-0. Now the crowd begins to sense that perhaps Kopp isn't going to give Aaron two something good and may lose him on pitches. It is 2-0. Conversely, Hank can now begin to look for his pitch with men on base and out in front of the pitcher. The throw by Kopp hits straight up in the air, and it may come back and even hit us. Nope, it's upstairs. 2-1 to Aaron.
It appears that Willie Mays at second base is rattling Jim Kopp somewhat because he's taking a real big lead, and Bobby Knopf, the American League second baseman, is jogging around trying to keep Willie close, and I think Kopp may be afraid to pitch sometimes with Knopf not in position.
Kopp taking the long look in to Hank Aaron with a 2-1 count. Sun has mercifully gone behind the clouds for just a moment. Kopp throws. Aaron hits it straight in the air. There'll be a play on this one, I believe. Over his freehand, but George Scott of Boston waves him away and takes it for the first out. Mays bluffs toward third. Knopf comes over to second, and Willie is walking slowly back. Scott is holding on the ball and now underhands it to Kopp. One down, still men on first and second. And here is big Willie McCovey, the first baseman of the San Francisco Giants. He popped out to Robinson in the second inning. McCovey is a left-hander, of course, and Kopp is a left-handed pitcher. On deck is Ron Santo. McAuliffe dashed in the back of Willie Mays, but now goes back as Kopp concentrates on McCovey. Inside, ball one.
Jim Kopp is especially tough on left-handed hitters. He has the type of fastball that sinks, and should he get it up, moves into a right-handed or left-handed hitter, rather.
Well, the National Leaguers have now out-hit the American Leaguers, but they still trail 1-0 here in the fourth. Pitch and fouled at the plate and rolls off toward the National League dugout, and it's 1-1 to McCovey. Scott's the first baseman, Knopf at second, McAuliffe at short, Robinson at third, Frank Robinson in left, Al Kaline in center, Oliva in right, Bill Freehand the catcher, and now Jim Kopp doing the pitching, and this the fourth inning. The set and the pitch, and he hits it off the fist down to George Scott. Scott's going down to second for one, and that's all there'll be. The force at second base on Roberto Clemente as Mays moves to third, but Kopp now has two of the National Leaguers down with Ron Santo coming up.
To give you an idea of the National League speed, Clemente, the runner on first base, almost beat Scott's throw into second base, and McAuliffe had to catch it and rapidly get out of the way.
Here is Santo, who hit a line drive that Brooks Robinson dove toward the left field line and made a great catch on. Santo, with 40 RBIs, can rip that ball and is a right-handed batter to face the left-hander, Kopp. Mays is at third. McCovey is at first. They're Giants at the corners. 2 down in the fourth inning. American League in front, 1-0, although they have been out hit by the National League. Throw by Kopp. Off-speed pitch, fails to come in, stays outside. It's ball one.
Thus far, the catcher, Bill Freehand of the American League, has set a pretty good pattern of trying to pitch all of these National League hitters outside. He's sitting mostly on that outside corner and trying to get his pitchers to shoot for that target. He wants to stay away from their power.
Mays has a good lead down the third baseline. As Kopp throws, Santo did not believe it was over, but umpire Al Bolick says it is, and it's 1-1. Off-speed pitch at the knees. Robinson keeps moving in from third behind Willie Mays. Mays talking to the coach, Harry Walker, over there. McCovey staying pretty close to first base for that left-handed pitcher. Two down. 1-1 to count to Santo. Cox ready and throws, and it's fouled. Look out in the stands on the right side. Skips up and is one-handed by a customer who's wearing a pith helmet to ward off this sun, which has now come back out. One ball, two strikes to Santo. The fourth inning of the 1966 All-Star Game. Out with a new ball, looking in for the sign from Bill Freehan, and is ready. 1-2 pitch, change up, outside, it's 2-2. Tony, I don't believe the people are going too far. Some of the seats that are vacant have now been taken again. Everyone is fanning themselves. They must go under the stands and simply cool off in this 100-degree plus heat and then come back in. In any event, here's the 2-2 pitch. Grounded. Robinson will have to hustle. At third, cannot make a play. Santo is safe. Mays scores. It's 1-1. McCovey moves to second.
The ball was not hit hard. It was topped down the third baseline. Brooks Robinson had to make a hurried play, came in as quickly as he could, just could not handle the ball, and I don't believe Jimmy'd have had a chance at Santo if he had fielded the ball cleanly.
Well, the official scores feel the same way, Tony. They've given him an infield hit. Robinson made a great try, but it's the third hit of the inning, and we've got a tie ball game. It's 1-1. Here's Joe Torre, who struck out swinging. Back in the second inning and takes strike one from Jim Bunning. While Denny McLean, who pitched three perfect innings and struck out three, can no longer win this ball game. The National Leaguers have fought back against Jim Cott. Still two down here in the fourth. Cott throws to Torre. Ground ball, McAuliffe underhands it to Knopf at second for the force play, and that's it. One run on three hits, no errors, and two men left. And the score at the end of the fourth inning is the American League 1, the National League 1.
Rules, rules. Sometimes you're for them and sometimes you're against them, but the world of sport would not exist without them. The rule book of a sport isn't just a set of laws made to be broken, but they are the rules of common courtesy. And if they aren't observed, the game would be chaos. It's true in most everything we do, like driving. Traffic rules are based on common courtesy, and it's even true in business. The best businesses are run by the rules of courtesy, like your Chrysler, Plymouth, and Dodge dealer. He calls his rule book customer care. What's that mean? It means when you bring your car in for service, he's nice to you. Every rule of courtesy is observed. Why? Because he wants you to come back. But he doesn't base his business on bedside manner alone. He's got certified service. Factory-trained mechanics using genuine Mopar Chrysler parts. Fix only what needs to be fixed. So if you're looking for the best service in the book, see the guys who play by the rules with customer care. Your Chrysler, Plymouth, or Dodge dealer.
Tony Kubek along with Jim Simpson at the 1966 All-Star Game. The American League, one run, one hit, no errors. The National League, one run, three hits, and no errors.
And Tony, here's the man who has the only run of the ballgame for the American League, Brooks Robinson, who swings on the first pitch from Jim Bunning to start the fifth. It's strike one. Bunning came on in relief of Sandy Koufax, who gave up one run on one hit and a wild pitch, and got Kaline, Robinson, and Oliva in the fourth inning. He is now pitching his second inning. The one-strike pitch from the right-hander Bunning is outside to the right-handed batter Brooks Robinson. Ball one. One and one.
And, Jim, if the mass exodus from the sun into the shade continues in this ballpark in St. Louis, we're going to have absolutely no one sitting in the sun in another inning or two.
Down ball. This should be a shot for Cardenas at short. He's up with it. Sidearms it to McCovey at first, and there's one out in the fifth inning. That was the ball that never took a real hop. It just hugged the grass, made it to the dirt. Cardenas scooped it up and threw out Brooks Robinson. Here's George Scott, who fouled a McCovey at first in his only other time at bat, the rookie first baseman from Boston. Temperatures better than 100 degrees in St. Louis and a real hot all-star baseball game. Curve ball catches the outside corner. Fine pitch by Jim Bunning.
Jim Bunning, of course, a big right-hander, throws a lot of sidearm, scares a lot of right-handed hitters out of the batter's box, has a wide, sweeping curveball and a hard fastball.
One strike pitch to Scott. Outside, it's 1-1.
And Bunning's follow-through, Jim, is something to see. He takes that right leg and wraps it completely around his left and his face completely towards center field when he finishes up. It seems as though he would not be able to feel the ball at all if it were hit back at him.
Curve ball outside. It is 2-1. One out in the fifth inning. The score is 1-1. In the second inning, Brooks Robinson tripled past Aaron, scored on a wild pitch. In the fourth inning, the National Leaguers put together three hits, including an infield hit by Ron Santo, which drove in Willie Mays with the tying run. And that's the scoring till now. Here's the 2-1 pitch to Scott. Outside, and it is 3-1 to George Scott. Bill Freehan, the Detroit catcher, on deck.
Talking about Bunning's follow-through, many clubs in the American League, when Bunning was with the Detroit Tiger Ball Club, started to bunt him toward the third base side, and Jim did have some difficulty getting over.
Here's a 3-1 pitch, and Scott is swinging. It's 3-2. By the way, the American League bat boy is Jay Mazzone from Baltimore. At age 2.5, he was in a fire and lost both of his hands, but has the use of artificial hands. Does not feel that he's handicapped at all. Plays baseball. Fine bat boy. And the American League has wanted him, and here he is. Scott hits this one straight up in the air. Backing up is Lefevre at second base, waving everybody away, and has it for the second out. That will bring up Jim, or rather Bill Freehan, who lined to Clemente in right field in the second inning. 1-1 the score. 2 down in the fifth. In a game that, either despite the heat or because of the heat, is moving right along, less than an hour old, and here we are at the fifth inning. Bunning ready for his first pitch to Freehan. Right-hander against right-hander. Curves him, but it's outside, ball one. You're listening to the 1966 All-Star Baseball game exclusively on NBC Radio, and we will bring you the World Series later this year. Bunning ready and throws. This one is down the pike. It's 1-1. And it appeared that Freehan was taking all away.
It's just the fourth inning, and Bill Freehan does not have a dry spot in his body. He's working hard back there. And I imagine he's getting a little tired.
Freehan has been a workhorse for Detroit, catching most of its games. Here's a big curve, and Freehan is way out in front of it. That curve started in at Freehan's left shoulder, which faces the pitcher. And broke all the way back in and over the plate. It was a good pitch, but had Freehan swinging and missing. It's 1-2. Bunning ready again. Fires this one a fastball, which is low and away, and it's 2-2. The crowd at this moment rather quiet in a 1-1 ball game, top of the fifth inning. On a hot afternoon. Many of these ball players have come in private planes. Many have come in private cars. Many have come in by train because of the partial airline strike. Bunning throws. There's the ball that may get through the infield and does pass Cardenas. And Freehan has the second hit of the ball game for the American League. A single to center.
The ball was not hit really hard. It was to Cardenas' left, right up the middle. But we had an idea of how hard this St. Louis infield is. It's been baked, as we mentioned, and the ball just scooted right on by him and went out to center field.
Well, with two down in the fifth, here's Bobby Knopf, who grounded to Santo at third in the third inning. And to repeat, both managers have gone all the way with their starting lineups, with the exception of the pitchers. We're now in the fifth inning. Bunning throws, and it's fouled to the screen by Knopf. Strike one. Bill Freehan at first with two down.
Bill Freehan is one of the few catchers in baseball that'll take a chance and try and steal a base. He runs fairly well, does not steal a lot of bases, but he can steal a base off certain pitchers if he should get a good jump.
Bobby Knopf, 224 in the regular season, but what a fielder he is, and with a chance now to move that runner, Freehan up, takes the curveball, picks on it, but fouls it into the right field stands. Count is two strikes to Knopf. He spells his name K-N-O-O-P. Can generate power. He has hit 11 home runs this year and has knocked in a bundle of runs, 44. Fifth inning of the 1966 All-Star Baseball game, and the score is 1-1. Bunning nods to his catcher, Torrey. Now throws a big curve that stays inside, and it's ball to Knopp. 1-2.
Knopp, of course, is not known for his prowess with the bat. He is basically a defensive player, and having him in the lineup is equivalent to saving a few runs or having a few runs driven in.
Another curveball, and Knopp strikes out. No runs, one hit, no errors, and one left. The score at the end of the first half of the fifth inning remains the American League 1 and the National League 1.
I've just run out.
You've just run out?
I'm out of cigarettes.
Well, try one of mine.
Try one of yours?
Sure. Try one of mine. Have a Salem. Salem is the best old cigarette that refreshes your taste for you. Salem is the best old cigarette all of America's turning to. When you buy a best old cigarette, don't take anything but the best. Salem is the best old cigarette, the one brand that outsells all the rest. Try one of mine. Turn to Salem for a taste that's springtime fresh.
We pause 30 seconds for station identification.
This is WGY, WGFM, Schenectady. The Carl W. List truckload sale is on with the biggest bargains ever offered in the 38-year history of Carl W. List. Special hours are in effect July 14th only, open until 9 p.m. Don't miss out on these bargains. Here are just a few. GE Disposal, only $27.04. 4,000 BTU GE air conditioners, only $99. And GE full-size wall ovens, only $78.14. Many are one-of-a-kind, so it's first come, first served. Don't miss this Bargain Hunters truckload sale at Carl W. List, 136 Erie Boulevard, Schenectady.
Followed by Carnivus, who is on deck. And the question will then become, will they bat for Jim Bunning or allow Bunning, a pretty good hitting pitcher, to bat for himself? There's a drive to left field. Frank Robinson is back near the warning track and has it for the first out. Lefevre flies to left. And here's Leo Cardenas, who lined to the second baseman Knopp in the third inning. And Robbie almost trapped the ball. Sorry, Tony.
Excuse me, Jim. Warming up for the National League is Juan Marichal right now, so we may see a pinch hitter for Jim Bunning. He has not as yet entered the batting circle.
Leo Cardenas facing Jim Cott, off-speed pitch, which he picks on and skies it high and foul. And George Scott's at first, chasing it, and has it for the second out. Now with two down, we will see what the National League manager, Walt Alston of the Dodgers, will do. No one has yet made an appearance. In the on-deck circle, Marichal is warming up. And while we wait, some fans still think of the professional baseball player as Ring Lardner. Used to picture him a few decades ago. Actually, the average major leaguer today is an intelligent, well-educated young man. More than 50% of the major leaguers have a college education. Many players continue their schooling while following a professional career at the same time on scholarships provided by their original baseball contract. Well, from the Philadelphia Phillies, Richie Allen has been called on to hit for Jim Bunning. We'll give you Bunning's pitching record in a moment. Allen hitting 322, 58 RBIs, 21 home runs. A right-handed batter to face Jim Cott takes a strike. Allen has played a lot of infield and this year almost exclusively outfield for the Philadelphia Phillies. One strike pitch and he swings and misses. It is strike two to Allen. Willie Mays will be on deck. He has scored the only run for the National League in this 1-1 ball game.
Richie Allen uses one of the heavier bats among today's modern day ball players. The trend is toward lighter bats.
Inside with the fastball, and it's 1-2.
Allen uses a 36-inch bat and sometimes wields a bat that weighs 40 ounces. compared to most players wield a 32-ounce bat.
Two out in the fifth. Conn is ready and strikes out Richie Allen to end the inning. No runs, no hits, no errors, and none left. The score at the end of the fifth inning is the American League 1 and the National League 1.
Hello there, this is Leon Kelly. That familiar theme introduces Kelly's Corner, a weekday fair that begins at 6:15. Along with fine dinner music and rare stories of the odd, strange, and curious, we have special features. When it comes to racing, we have just about all the bases covered. It begins at 6:15 with Track Talk with Tuff, behind-the-scenes views of the Trotters, Pacers, and the Thoroughbreds. Mondays and Thursdays at 7:05, Bill Carpenter covers the stock car racing results from 14 tracks.
This is NBC News. At 7, a summary of the news from NBC.
This is Morgan Beatty bringing you NBC's News of the World.
Kelly's Corner keeps you further informed at 7:30 when Morgan Beatty reports the news with on-the-scenes accounts of events from where it happens. Yes, you'll find it interesting, informative, and entertaining in Kelly's Corner, weekdays 6:15 until 8 on WGY Schenectady.
The score, 1-1, a tie ball game here in the first of the sixth inning for the American League. Two hits, no errors, one run. National League, one run, three hits, and no errors.
Antonius Marichal moves in. Juan, the man with the big kick. In the on-deck circle is Harmon Killebrew.